Good morning, everybody, and happy Tuesday here on the Jeff Calkins Show. It's Tuesday. That means, let's see, it means we got Fish on Friday on Tuesday. We have him every single Tuesday, our man in Washington, D.C. Before that, Chris Harrington, straight up at 10 o'clock. The first hour is wide open. We do have lots of things to talk about. I was tempted, Jeffrey, in the interest of just making this an upbeat show, I was tempted to just spend 2 hours talking about the Buffalo Bills. What do you think? I am always looking for the happy thing to talk about, and it does strike me that today the happiest thing that I could talk about is my beloved Buffalo Bills.
Yeah, to me, last night was one of those games where the doubleheaders went the exact opposite way that I thought they were going to go. I thought Cincinnati being 0-2. Would come out playing like a, you know, with their hair on fire, and that would be the team that would cruise. And I thought the Jaguars being 0-2, kind of being desperate. I don't think they had, like, I thought they played pretty well against the Dolphins and just blew it. And then they had the weird weather game against the Browns, and everything just got off to a disaster. But it was very obvious to me, basically, in the first quarter. I think I texted you because you said you weren't watching yet. And I was like, the Jags look weird. Like, they looked like they didn't care. They looked like they had no answers for anything the Bills were doing, and the Bills just absolutely, like, just destroyed them. I mean, it was like they could do nothing to stop them.
It was a party. It was a party. It was a party.
And then when the Bengals...
I appreciated it. Even I could watch. There was so little suspense that I could watch pretty much and immerse myself in every minute of that of that party. We'll talk about more about the NFL coming up. But I can't in good conscience, given that we live in Memphis, I can't in good conscience turn this into a two-hour celebration of the Buffalo Bills. Although I did find myself wishing, it's a good time to be a Bills fan, and I like that. I'm happy for the city, and I will be happy when Memphis has... that kind of celebration,
yeah.
that it can engage in. And maybe it's not too far away because the Grizzlies are, you know, starting up their season shortly, and this could be that kind of a season for the Grizzlies. Truth of the matter is that just 3 weeks ago, almost everybody had, not you, but almost everybody had written off the Buffalo Bills. You know, their time was past.
The window had closed.
The window had closed. Yeah, the window had closed. So, and who knows? It may close again. Seasons are long, so we shall see. But anyway, I hope for that kind of spirit for Memphians, that kind of joy for Memphians as Tiger basketball cranks up and as Grizzlies basketball cranks up. Again, today on the show, we got Chris Harrington straight up at 10 o'clock. We'll talk to him about the Derrick Rose news, among other matters. And then Fish on Friday on Tuesday. That is the second hour. Obviously, the big news yesterday that broke during Jason and John's show was that the University of Memphis will be staying put in the American Athletic Conference. And I've said this. Jarvis was just texting me about all the reasons this was the smart decision. I will say this. I said it yesterday. I continue to believe it. Something can both be the smart decision or the prudent decision or the careful decision or the safe decision or however you want to describe it, and also something that depresses you. Both of those things can be true. And at least that is how it hit me. I'm not going to come on here and say rail against Memphis for stupidly turning down this opportunity. I think it's an entirely defensible decision for all the reasons, as we've said from the beginning, this is a math problem. And let's be honest, wherever, I do know people who think they should have taken the risk. I know people with authority who think they should have taken the risk. But it clearly was not a no-brainer to go. The safer thing was to stay. If it was a no-brainer to go, Tulane wouldn't be staying. UTSA wouldn't be staying. South Florida wouldn't be staying. Memphis wouldn't be staying. So it is very clearly the safer, more prudent decision to stay. But that doesn't mean that it is a decision that fills you with joy or jubilation or anything like that. What I will not come on here and say that Memphis should have gone. I will lament that the offer wasn't so compelling that Memphis had to go. I will lament that they are stuck where they are stuck. And the truth of the matter is, this last 2 weeks, I guess it's been 2 weeks, Jeffrey, has it been 2 weeks? When did this saga first start for us? Was it 2 weeks ago?
Really last Monday.
Yeah. So you wish it hadn't never happened, you know, because before it happened, you were just going along. You had vague hopes of the ACC someday or whatever, but no one had their hopes
up. I guess I should clarify. The Memphis pursuit got real last week, or maybe even on the weekend prior. We found out about the new Pac-12, if
you
will.
That was the previous week, at the end of the previous week. Yeah. So it would have been better if it not happened, because then people wouldn't be mad, people wouldn't be disappointed, and people wouldn't be looking around at their own house and thinking how shabby it is. You know, they wouldn't have been so reminded how shabby it is. I mean, this is why I both find the decision to be defensible and find it to be depressing, is because I just looked again at the Memphis home football schedule. Their home conference football games are against North Texas, Charlotte, Rice, and UAB. That is what they chose to stay with. They chose to stay with a basketball conference that is so putrid that there is no opportunity for a good win, or let's be honest, a compelling draw for the at FedEx Forum once the calendar turns to January. That is what they chose to stick with. And so that may be sensible that they chose to stick with it. It may be the only chance that they actually, the only real decision that there was. But it's not a decision that brings you great joy by any stretch, at least not to me. And so I understand that there are people out there fiercely defending this decision, and I hear them. But I can't hear anyone say, and this is great. It's just worse. It's like if you're driving around town in my old minivan and you hate my minivan and you want a new car and you think you're going to get a bonus from work. It's just, you'd heard rumors that there was going to be, you were going to get a $30,000 bonus from work. And then you start looking at this car and you think, my God, this is the worst car in the world. Like, this has got, it's dented. It's got transmission problems. Honestly, the dogs are in here so much, it kind of smells. And I can't wait to get a new car. And so you go and you even shop for some new cars. You allow yourself to go to the dealership, and you can't buy the brand new, I can't buy a car like Jeffrey's truck, but you can buy a pretty damn nice previously used car. And you allow yourself to start thinking about that car and think about how much life, but just you get kind of excited about it. And all that has is they just got to come through with a bonus at work. And then the bonus doesn't come through. There was no bonus. The work wasn't, in fact, operating at peak efficiency and didn't have all this extra money to throw around. There's no bonus. And so you're stuck in your car. That is, in fact, the financially responsible thing to do, is to remain in that old stinky minivan. But that doesn't mean it's not a stinky minivan. It's still a stinky minivan. And that's why it's depressing. It's depressing because, not because it was the wrong decision, although I have heard people argue it was the wrong decision, and I can make that argument for you, but because it's a joyless decision. I mean, here's the truth. If you go to Ross Dellinger, who's been reporting the hell out of this from the beginning, as is John Canzano. It was John Canzano yesterday who wrote the story saying that this was going to be a deadline by the end of the day. So he alerted us to what the timeline would be. But if you read Ross Dellinger, Ross Dellinger wrote this. That plan is going to be limited by another reality. Memphis, one consultant told US Today Sport. This wasn't Doug Dellinger. This was Dan. One consultant told US Today Sports is not valued by TV rights holders significantly more than, say, Utah State. And Oregon State and Washington State, two original Pac-12 leftovers who decided to bring the conference back, aren't valued much more than Memphis. Well, I don't doubt that. But it's a hell of a thing to hear. Like last week, we were getting caught up in this, in what Dellinger did write, which was that Memphis had emerged as clearly the best group of five conference team. And now we're getting, Memphis really isn't seen as anything that moves the TV needle. By the way, both of those things can be true. Both of those things probably are true.
Well, right? I think what's honestly probably true, it's not even necessarily like, oh, Utah State's, you know, on par with Memphis. The reality is what faces college athletics is there's only like 15 to 20.
No one moves a needle. Right. Yeah. Like here's the truth. If you are outside of Memphis, you don't say to yourself, damn, Memphis is playing today. Got to watch that. You just don't. But by the way, you also never said that for Cincinnati. Except maybe their undefeated season you did, but generally speaking, this week you're not saying Cincinnati's playing. God, you're not saying it for SMU. You're not saying it for, as you point out, you're not saying it for Kansas. You're not saying it for Mississippi State. Unless you're a fan of that school, you're not saying it for any of those schools. So that doesn't make Memphis that much different, actually, than schools that have been swept up or that circumstances have allowed them to be on the other side of this. But it does suggest that Memphis can be the best group of five school out there, and it can also be a group of five school that does not motivate any TV executive to step up and pay big bucks to get Memphis. If you need the numbers to fill out your conference, that's why Memphis was desired here, because they needed the numbers to fill out the conference. So my fundamental view of it is that, and listen, if you want to hear the argument that they were wrong to go, I think that's what John believes, that Ron cannot go. I think, I don't know, I can't say for sure, but I've been texting him back and forth. I think John believes that they were wrong to not take this. And I don't believe that. I certainly don't believe it with enough confidence to come out and write that column or argue that's true. I think here's the argument, by the way, to me, the argument that they should have gone is you have to take the risk at some point. Like, this is the argument. The argument is you have to take the risk. Look at what is happening to your football and basketball programs. You looked up all season long, all off season long. We heard this was the most anticipated football season ever. And then you can't, draw maybe 20,000 people to the games. People are voting with their feet. You look at the schedule again, North Texas, Charlotte, Rice, UAB. You've got a dwindling, detached fan base. Look at Memphis Tiger basketball. I will wager you ticket sales will be down again this year. You've got a whole bunch of fans who became fans when Memphis played Louisville in basketball, when Memphis played Cincinnati in basketball, when Memphis played regularly Ole Miss or Mississippi State or Arkansas in football. And now they don't. It's not the same way it used. It's not the same that it used to be. This is dramatically worse than it used to be. And those fans who became fans when those things were happening, they're my age and older. And so there is a whole bunch of new fans or lack of new fans who are coming along. There's a whole generation, and Memphis is playing Rice. Memphis is being absolutely resigned to sub-mediocrity, and it's showing. And so what you have to do is, no, it's not guaranteed. Nothing about this is guaranteed. You know what else isn't guaranteed? What's going to happen when you stay in the AAC? That's not guaranteed. That's going to be great either. How long? Yes, there is evidently a look in on the ESPN TV deal. And according to all the reporting, the look in can't reduce that. So that's good. That's good. That's great. But what's the next TV deal look like? And so the argument would be you need to re-energize this fan base with something other than the old schlock. And if that means Gonzaga could well, there's disputes on this, Gonzaga could well be joining the Pac-12. If Gonzaga is coming in here and San Diego State is coming in here, and if in football, no, Boise is in Alabama, but Boise beats Rice and Charlotte. If Boise and Washington State and whatever, it's something new, it's something fresh, it's something invigorating, and all of a sudden there's something to be interested in. And this is a moment in the history of this school when you have to jump on that. I'm not making that argument. That to me is the argument. I'm not making it just because in the end, the dollars are the dollars. And if you've got to pay a $25 million exit fee and you're only getting $2.5 million from the Pac-12, which is the reporting on this, like in the end, you don't have money just falling out of your pockets. And so if you can't go, you can't go. But all that means to me is you're stuck in the minivan and it shines a light on the sort of drab situation that Memphis is in. And so it may have been defensible, may have been sensible, but it was a fundamentally joyless day, at least from my perspective. Jeffrey, your perspective.
Completely agree. It just kind of was a bummer. I mean, that's really how I viewed it. And to me, it's like once the report came out that they offered to pay $2.5 million of the $25 million exit fee, I was like, well, there really wasn't a decision to be made. I mean, you can go to people and say, hey, would you help pay this? And they're going to sit there and go, well, what are we paying for you to go join the Mountain West? And I don't think that that's a bad decision. In fact, that's probably the proper decision. The fear that I have, and I've always had, is we're now reaching this point where the major college athletic landscape is not really expanding. And I thought your best path to survival was some type of, to me, is essentially it was taking the best parts of your league, taking the best parts of another league, and then taking two people that had been once power leagues, you know, power league members, and somehow, you know, uniting together. But at the same time, is that, who's to say that that league's going to sit there and not just get left out in the cold too? And so then you bring in the position where you've spent $20+ million to go and just be left out. And now you're traveling across the country with your volleyball teams, with everyone. And
right. Oh no, let's be honest. What's happened is take this past weekend. It's Oklahoma, Tennessee, and it's Michigan, USC.
Yes.
Right. Like that's where college sports is right now. That's certainly where college football is right now. It's marquee team against marquee team. Why, if you're a TV executive, and that's why the shame of this is that TV executives are making decisions on behalf of universities, which should be stand for something other than just where the biggest pile of money is. That's a university of all things is a public institution that you would think would have values apart from where's the biggest pile of money. But those are their values, that you would think that they would see something to be said for geographic integrity and tradition and all of that, and inclusiveness, honestly. But they don't. Like, they don't. And so there is a world of haves and have-nots, and this is just the brutal truth of it. Memphis is a have-not, you know? And does that mean that and in football, in some ways, it doesn't. Like, Memphis never was a have in football. You know, Memphis never had a chance to compete at a national level in football. And you can argue that at least this year, with the hope of the playoff system and whatever, that it's as good as it's ever been. It's kind of curious in basketball and depressing in basketball, because that's where Memphis has forever competed on the national stage. And it is going to be increasingly hard to do. Not really because the players who come in will care so much about the fact that they're playing Rice and East Carolina, as much as it is the money ultimately will be overwhelming for the power schools as compared to Memphis, and players are going to follow the money. So we'll see. I mean, Gonzaga has obviously been successful outside the power structure. UConn, it's in its own little world, but not UConn isn't getting power, what used to be Power Five, Power Four money. They're not doing that. UConn has been wildly successful. And so it will be up to Penny and that basketball team to figure out how to continue to be successful in this world. Just so people know, again, the reporting at least, Jeffrey, and correct me if I'm wrong, the reporting at least was that the projection, it was just a projection, projection TV money next deal, 12 to 15, 10 to 15 million.
So Ross is again, Ross pro 10 to 15. And to me, like, yeah, that's kind of a huge gap.
It's a big gap. Of course, 10 is bigger than 7. You know, like if it was solid, here's the truth. If it was solid 15, right? Guaranteed written on a contract 15, then honestly, then you could justify paying a pretty hefty exit fee. Because if you're getting $15 million as opposed to $7 million, you know, over a five-year period and then hopefully beyond, you can make up the, what would it have been, $22.5 million. If it was a $25 million exit fee and the conference was pitching in $2.5 million, you can make that up over a period of time. But it wasn't guaranteed. So that's the first thing. Second thing was they were only paying $2.5 million of the $22.5 million. Third thing was you weren't being left behind by Tulane and UTSA and South Florida. If they were going and you weren't, it would have been much more difficult to not go. But because they are all staying, it becomes much easier to stay. So I think it is the safe and the prudent and the depressing decision. I think that is true. As for what the Pac-12 does, there is this dispute. Brett McMurphy reported yesterday that Gonzaga is going to go as a basketball-only member. And honestly, that news came out almost immediately after the news about Memphis declining the invitation or declining to receive an invitation, because I guess no invitation was formally. They never are. If you're not going to say yes, they don't give you an invitation. But Memphis was not going to go. Very quickly thereafter, we saw the report that Gonzaga is going to go in basketball only. And that became a double whammy. You're like, oh my God, we could have had a home game against Gonzaga every year, and we're walking away from that? What a devastating blow that is. But then you immediately had multiple people saying, not done yet. Now, Brett has then come back and said, I stand by my reporting. A lot of times in this circumstance, and it's one reason I've always been reluctant to try to correct reports with a not done yet. Because, yeah, a lot of things are not done yet, but they're going to get done.
Yeah.
And so you just kind of look silly as saying, no, not done yet. No, not done yet. But, you know, they're going to draft this player, going to make this trade, or everybody knows it. It's done. No, it's not formally done yet. So I don't know where that is. I'm kind of just, for my own morale purposes, hoping that Gonzaga does not go to the Pac-12, because I don't want to have to live in a world where I can imagine Gonzaga coming in for home games and having passed up on that. And then we have the news, Utah State is certainly, and it's funny though, at first they were definitely going. Now I've seen some back and forth on that. UNLV is another one that is mentioned. Air Force apparently staying. There was even some reporting about UConn going as a football only. So whatever, who knows? They still, the Pac-12 still has to hit their number. They still have to, in order to continue as a conference, they still have to hit their number. Do you have any guesses as to what the Pac-12 is going to do now?
So I've also seen, and this was the first thought, you know, back when Oregon State and Washington State got left behind, is that there would be a merger between the Mountain West and the Pac-12. You maintain the Pac-12 brand. I mean, to me, I think this is really kind of what stood out to me yesterday when you started watching. After Memphis, Tulane, SMU, I think UTSA's got a pretty good PR department. I think they kind of threw themselves in there. I'm not sure how serious that they were considered. But what it shows to me is that a lot of other schools started saying no. I mean, the Mountain West schools had the opportunity, because at a certain point when those schools said no, they started scrambling and trying to get people. And this feels like Oregon State and Washington State kind of kicking and screaming, saying, like, you know, no, we're not going to do all this. We're not going to pay all this. Like, this is our money.
Whatnot. Oh, no, they're getting screwed now. Yeah, no, there's...
But, like, I think they misplayed their hand. And it's like part of this was because they didn't want to be in the Mountain West. And now you're left and you dragged all these other people into this. And everyone's just kind of... It feels like nobody's happy right now with this last 2 weeks.
That seems right. You know what? I didn't tell you we were going to do this.
All right.
I'll be interested in this. Let's do a Jeff Calkins show poll. Are you glad Memphis turned down the Pac-12? Yes. No. Are you happy? Are you happy Memphis? No. How about this? Was it smart? What should we do? Should we do happy or smart?
What about was it right?
Yeah, well, that's smart. Was it smart? Was it right? Because a lot of people won't be happy. I'm trying to discern. Are we trying to decide if people are happy or if we thought they made the right decision? Let's do this one.
How do you feel about...
How do you feel about Memphis turning down the... turning down the Pac-12 and make it... make it A, glad, B, mad, and C, disappointed but understand. How about that? Glad, mad, disappointed but understand. Because there are, by the way, and I want to make sure I capture this. Although I think the vast majority of the fan base is disappointed, is either mad or disappointed but understand, I do and did hear from at least a
we've run substantial out of characters.
A substantial amount. Where are we running out of characters?
Disappointed but understand. So we get to understand.
Disappointed but get it. Disappointed but get it. Same thing. Right? I'm a words guy. That'll do. That'll convey the same thing, right? Disappointed, but get it. But I get it. Can you get an I get it? Disappointed, but I get it. Anyway, I do think there is a substantial minority of people who never liked this idea because A, they travel to games. I've heard from them. B, they don't want to stay up and watch games at 9 o'clock. You know, I didn't. That's another one. I think there's a significant minority of people who are perfectly fine with this decision and never really wanted them to go. Let's fire up the old whole poll, Jeffrey, and we're going to take a break, and we will be back in a moment. It's Tuesday on the Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. All right, the poll is up, Jeffrey. The poll is up. This was not a well-planned poll, so it's kind of spur of the moment. How do you feel about Memphis turning down the Pac-12? And the answers are possible answers are glad, mad, disappointed, but I get it. Overwhelmingly disappointed, but I get it. We'll win, right?
I think so. We're starting to see the numbers kind of come down, but it's going to win by at least double.
Yeah, it's going to win. And here's the point, though. How many are going to be glad?
So right now we're showing under 10%, and to me, like, that sounds about right. I think we're showing 7.7%.
Yeah. It gets to the point that I made at the beginning. There are some people who will tell you they should have gone. There are other people who just keep beating the drum. This was stupid. They're never going to go, whatever else. Yeah, that's right. And I, as I so often do, I take the middle position, which is, yeah, I totally understand why they had to make the safe decision. But it's still a bummer of a day. And you can't try to spin it otherwise. And so, you know, I think I'll vote right now. Here we go. Disappointed, but I get it. That's where I am. Disappointed, but I get it. At least according to my little reading here, Jeffrey, it's at 66%. Mad, 24%. Glad, 10%. Among the people who are mad are John Martin, and I don't want to tip his hand. You should hear his show starting at 11. I'm an avid listener from 11 until 2. And he says he'd like to put up a poll. And his poll will be, where will Memphis basketball, what league is Memphis basketball in 2030? AAC, AAC, AAC. I like AAC in that poll, don't you?
I think so. I mean,
his real point is this, and this is, to me, it speaks to the exhaustion and futility, right, of all of this. And this is a, if you look at the past 30 years, there have been many worse days than yesterday. You know, there was the day the Big East blew up. That was a bad day. There was a day that Memphis wasn't invited to be even one of the finalists in the Big 12 expansion that never happened. That was a bad day. There were days that Cincinnati left and Louisville left and UCF left and Houston left. There was a day that the SMU left. There's been a lot of bad days, and this wasn't one of them. But they tend to, this wasn't as bad as a lot of them, but they tend to accumulate, and there gets to be a sense of futility. Now, I hope that there's a football game at 6:30 this Saturday. MTSU. Memphis should win. Maybe it'll be a nice night. It's fun to watch. They're a good team. They are a good team, even if they're not, maybe not the great team, maybe not the team we want them to be. Certainly they weren't Saturday. I hope 30,000 go.
Yeah.
But I doubt it. But I doubt it.
I mean, Auburn's playing Georgia.
Auburn's playing Georgia.
I mean, I'm sorry, Bama's playing Georgia. Bama's playing Georgia.
Bama's playing Georgia. Yeah, Bama. Yeah, Bama. Bama. I saw... Bama fans are putting out, I've seen that they're eating the dogs. Mm-hmm. I've seen that being turned into memes in advance of Alabama, Georgia, which will be a sensational tilt, or should be a sensational tilt. What do you think, Jeffrey? What do you think the future is? Go ahead, predict it for me.
It feels like this is maybe a concession that, hey, this path was... Our only path to survival is to get into the ACC or the Big 12. If we're not getting into that league, that we're just moving deck chairs, and you know, it's not going to really change anything.
Do you think, by the way, and I don't have a clear opinion on this, but I think I have a leaning. Do you think Memphis should come out and address this in a more open-hearted way than simply releasing the statement they released, and in a more transparent way? Or can you not do that? Are you not allowed to discuss negotiations and whatever else? In other words, I do think this is a blow for the program, because at least what percent, Jeffrey, are mad right now? What percent are mad?
I think it was
legit mad.
I think it was 25. Let me.
Yeah. So again, it's not a scientific poll, but you got 20, you got a quarter of the fan base that's legit mad, and another 50% of the fan base that's disappointed, understands but get it. So you got 75% of the fan base that's unhappy in one form or another. They're either mad or they're disappointed, right?
I mean, basically you got 90% of the fan base.
Is that true? What are the numbers right now?
71.8% for disappointed, but I get it. 19.8% for mad.
Yeah. So you got 90% of the fan base is grumpy about this, you know, feels lousy about this in one way, shape, or form. They either are disappointed or they're mad. And so if 90% of your fan base is of an already dwindling, precarious fan base, if 90% of the fan base is either disappointed or mad, maybe, and again, I thought it was very persuasive when Ed Scott came on our radio show, and I'm not saying Ed Scott needs to come back to our radio show. We're always welcome to have him, and it is quite the platform, but my point is that I think talking about this to their fan base, beyond just saying we're just going to be the best Memphis we can be, you know, talking about it like, listen, and giving some details, you know, why it wouldn't work, like why this was untenable and why you should be hopeful for the future, I tend to think it would be helpful. Maybe there's nothing to say. Maybe you just can't, in the world of high stakes negotiations, come out and give details. And maybe there's nothing to say other than we're going to be the best we can, best, you know, Memphis we can be. But if there was a message to deliver that would, I just think speaking openly and honestly with your fans with enthusiasm and transparency tends to be the best way. And so I think hiding behind a statement is probably not the best way. I think they owe it to, as emotionally invested in this as their fans are and got to be over the last 2 weeks, I think they owe it to themselves to explain and to try to generate some enthusiasm going forward. I don't know. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I'm of two minds. I totally agree that I think transparency with messaging, I think, is always the best approach. The problem is, what is there to say? Because the detail...
Well, what is there good to say?
Well, but yeah. It's just like, hey, why didn't we go? Well, the exit fee was going to be $25 million, and they offered to pay $2.5 million. Like, to me, it's like that is the story.
It's out there. Yeah. It's a depressing story. It's out there. It means like we didn't have the money. It's like if your kid comes home and says, "Mom and Dad, why do we still live in this hellhole of a neighborhood?" Well, Johnny, Mommy and Daddy don't make enough money to move out. You know, so we're
Josephine,
here.
Your brothers went into finance, and your dad talks about sports.
Exactly. That's why. Exactly. All right. Anyway, there you go. We will say that we'll dip into the poll again from time to time and give you an update on that. We will talk to Chris Harrington straight up at 10 o'clock. We'll talk to him about the Derrick Rose situation. And then we'll talk Fish on Friday on Tuesday as we do. My fundamental view on the Derrick Rose thing, Jeffrey, it's good news, right?
Yeah.
Derrick Rose evidently asked. Yeah, go ahead.
I'll say it means we missed our first preseason prediction.
Yeah, well, it doesn't. It takes it off the table.
Yes.
I think it's not
applicable.
Yeah, it doesn't apply. Mine was, you may think that they're never playing Derrick Rose, but it's going to be a little bit of a problem, and I think they will have to tip their cap to Derrick Rose and play him early, at least until he gets hurt. And now it may be that he knew that they were never going to play him. So I would have been wrong. Right. And that's why he asked out. Ian Begley is the person who reported this first, I believe. And he said it was Derrick Rose asking to be let out of the contract, to be released, which is why this happened. And obviously now the Grizzlies have two roster spots. They already had one roster spot. Now they had two roster spots. And one imagines that Scottie Pippen Jr. will join the main roster. Isn't that what you imagine?
Yes, I would imagine. I don't know. Are they going to have to redo some? Because they're basically up against the salary cap, right?
We will discuss all of these repercussions.
Yeah, it counts.
We'll discuss these repercussions with Chris when he joins the show. So the Derrick Rose, great emotional experiment. It was fun last year. He said it was the best decision of his life. That's a pretty good decision, Jeffrey. Best decision of his life. Kid went to Lausanne. One imagines that he's probably not going to be living in Memphis, and his kid, I don't know, it probably doesn't go to Lausanne anymore. I don't know. But it was fun while it lasted, and we had a couple of nice press conferences and one or two decent appearances and then a lot of injuries. And so there you go. One hopes that Ja Morant learned from Derrick Rose what there was to learn from Derrick Rose in that 1 year of sort of being around him. Other matters, Jeffrey, to discuss. The Showboats hired a new head coach, Ken Whisenhunt, who, of course, coached the Arizona
Chargers
Cardinals to the
yeah.
Super Bowl and the Titans right down the road. And then the guy who I'm more excited about is Jim Monos, who's the new GM. He is a former Buffalo Bills executive. And so now, mind you, he was part of the Doug Whaley regime. He's a great talker. We got to get him on the show. He majored in journalism in college. And then I think, was it Carolina? He went and worked as an intern in the PR department. It's not unlike Brandon Bean's sort of job. I don't not unlike Zach. You know, I think didn't Zach start in the
I thought Zach was in
Charlotte's. Was it? I think when he was in law school, he was interning there, And I think he may have been, you know, running box scores. Anyway, so Jim Monos is the GM. Ken Wisenhunt is the head coach. I'm always mystified why they do this. Like, why? Like, if you've coached in the Super Bowl, do you want to come and coach the Showboats, or do you just want to do something with you? Like, are you bored?
I think you just want to be around football. Money?
You just want to be around football. Yeah,
I can't imagine it's money. There's plenty of other things Ken Wisenhunt could do that I would assume pays him the same.
Well, Jim Monos was there's a website called Go Long, NFL website called Go Long. It's really good, and it's what it suggests. It's long form features and stories. The Sean McDermott story about 9/11. Remember that one? Sean McDermott's, you know, that was Go Long broke that story, and Jim Monos wrote a column for Go Long last year, I think. So he was keeping his toe in, but he's obviously going to be happy to be working with players again. Anyway, that's the news from there. And then we did have Monday Night Football last night. Out of deference to the better game, we can start with a better game where the Commanders. Both games were stunning in their own way.
Yes, right? Totally agree.
The Bills game was stunning because a desperate Jacksonville team, and the Bills just blew them out. It was not a contest from the beginning. And so that was stunning. The Commanders Bengals was stunning because the Commanders are 2-1 and the Bengals are 0-3. And Jaden Daniels, 21-23, 254 yards. That throw to McLaren is unbelievable.
I mean, like, holy hell.
What a, like Josh was great. The best single throw last night was that throw.
Absolutely. Especially considering the stakes.
Yeah, considering the stakes, it was incredible.
I mean, it's a do or die play. They're blitzing everybody, and you throw an absolute dime.
So because this was the rare Bills game that I could watch from beginning to end because of the utter lack of suspense, I did not see much of the other game. I don't have TV1 and TV2 the way you do. And so I was just locked in on the party in Buffalo. How did he look throughout?
He looked very, very good. Granted, the Bengals defensive line was banged up, and so they got little to no pressure on him. But every single time they got the ball, I mean, they never punted. And you could just tell, Jeff, like, if it was get him outside the pocket.
How, by the way, this is the first game since 1940 in which there were no points or turnovers. Okay.
No punts or turnovers.
No punts or turnovers. So no punts or turnovers since 1940. How, if there are no punts and no turnovers, how is it only 38-33?
Longer drives, you know what I mean?
Were there fourth down stops?
There was a missed field goal. McPherson missed a field goal, and then the Bengals just kept stalling out in the red zone.
Right now, I'm giving you a choice for the Jeffrey Wright fighting labs, or the fighting shepherds, or whatever. The Jeffrey Wright fighting mutts. Okay, and I'm letting you have Jaden Daniels as your franchise quarterback going forward, or Caleb Williams as your franchise quarterback going forward. Who would you have taken before the season began, and who would you take now?
I would have taken Caleb before the season, and I'm still taking Caleb now. To me, what we're seeing from Jaden is it's a continuation of what we've seen at LSU. I mean, I can't tell you how many times last year he made throws to the end zone with pressure in his face, and you go, oh my gosh. Like he did that. I still think the bigger problem with the Bears is you hire like Shane Waldron to run your offense, and it's like, to me, it's like Kingsbury, yeah, he has the reputation of falling up, and it's probably deservedly so. I do think what he does on offense works, and they are putting Jaden Daniels in much better positions to succeed than what the Bears are asking Caleb to do. And to me, it's like Jaden is also taking a ton of hits, and I just wonder, like, how sustainable is that at his size? Like, last night they were making a big deal. He actually slid at one point.
In the other game, Bills absolutely dominant, and Josh Allen was incredible. MVP chance. I don't like MVP chance. Mostly I don't like him. What I mostly don't like him is when a player who I like and is at the foul line. Because I was about to say,
the first thing that comes to mind is guys. Because
it guarantees
line.
A missed foul shot. Yeah. Like, it just guarantees. You're just sick asking for a missed foul shot. So don't do that. But the MVP chance last night were appropriate. In the first half, he was 22 of 28, 247 yards. He was, in the first half, 6 of 6 for 72 yards on third down. He hit 9 different receivers. And then, honestly, that one of them was not Mac Hollins, and so they made sure at the beginning of the second half, the first pass went to Mac Hollins. So that's hit 10 receivers. 6 Bills have caught touchdown passes, which is the most in the league. For a team that is supposed to be taking a step back, they do not seem like they're actually taking a step back. It was a dominant performance. Khalil Shakir is the sort of new go-to guy. I don't love their wideouts still, but Khalil Shakir, I love him. 16 targets on the season, 16 catches. And so the Bills in good shape. Gabe Davis comes back and catches 2 passes for 18 yards, basically inconsequential. They go on the road now to the Ravens, then the Texans, then the Jets. So MVP chance, fine. If they can run those 3, then I think they'll pick up in earnest. And by the way, after they have the road games against the Ravens, the Texans, and the Jets, they still play going forward after that. They still play the Seahawks, the Chiefs, the Niners, the Rams, the Lions, and the Jets again. It is an absolutely hellacious schedule. But you texted me last night, you think they could well be better than they were last year.
It still just comes back to me, like, everything you mentioned about Josh with the amount of receivers and whatnot, this is kind of what Brady did. Like, Brady had a number one receiver with Moss for, what, 2 seasons, 3 seasons, and then set every passing record. But when you look at, like, when the Patriots were at their best, there was never, like, a true number one. I guess you could say red zone target with Gronk, but Gronk was banged up his entire career. But the thing that's so nice right now is you don't feel like you have to force feed anyone. Like, you don't have to get somebody going. You don't have to, like, he's able to just drop back, read the field, and make the right throw. And it just makes him look even better and better. And I think it was the right decision, because this is, your best player was Josh Allen, and you're now having him run the show. And it's not, Josh has to get Stephon going. And then I think the other big thing is, it's like, putting Cooks as the primary back has really changed the running game.
Yeah, if you've got Justin Jefferson as your number one wide receiver, by all means, knock yourself out.
Right.
But if you've got a guy in Stephon Diggs who was diminished, he's not what he once was, and still needs every target.
Right.
That actually is, that hurts the offense. That doesn't help the offense.
And to me, like, the two things the Bills really had to improve from last year was red zone offense, and right now I think they're second in red zone touchdowns, touchdown percentage.
Helps to go 5 for 5 on touchdown drives in the first half last night. By the way, before we got Chris Harrington coming up next, then we got Fisher on Friday on Tuesday. There are a couple other things I had on my list that I did want to talk about, but one was the Young Dolph trial, which is riveting. And then the other is the Hugh Freeze,
ooh boy.
Hugh Freeze situation. Equally riveting. Just tell people what happened yesterday with your man Hugh.
So yesterday on his radio program, he said, 9 times, or I hope I have all the respect for Cal and for Arkansas, and I hope Sam Pittman wins every game the rest of the way. But 9 times, if we play 10 times, we win the next 9. I guarantee that. It's like, okay, even if you believe that, like, what is the point? Like, you got beat on the field.
That's a little bit like the beat writers who say, "I knew that," you know, who say, "Tell me if you knew that."
They never had a lead in the game.
Oh, that's crazy. That's crazy. We do have more on the Dan Campbell story, by the way. Remember the Dan Campbell, the Lions coach, had to move because someone publicized his address. And after the loss to the Niners, there were people outside the home and whatever else. So he moved, sold the home. It turns out the person who did it was a classmate of his daughter's in high school, and posted that night of the loss to San Francisco, dumb F, trying to go for it. And not only that, then went and basically went to the house and heckled he and some friends, you know, honked their horns or did whatever. And at this point, of course, Dan Campbell and his wife were, you know, weren't home. They were making their way back from the game on the West Coast. And so, so that was it. It was a dumbass classmate who they did investigate and interview, but there's not a criminal charge. Like there's nothing, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Thought it was funny. So thought it was funny. So that's where that came from. Jeffrey, one last time, what's the update on the Jeff Calkins Show poll today?
Jeff, our poll question is, of course, how are you feeling about Memphis's decision to spurn the Pac-12? I don't know why it's this difficult to pull up, but here we go. We are now at 266 votes tallied. 66.9% say disappointed, but I get it. 20.3% say mad. 12.8% say glad.
Glad's making a small comeback, but that means 88% are either mad or disappointed.
Yeah.
So that's a pretty substantial part of your fan base that is not happy today. Chris Herndon coming up next, then Fish on Friday on Tuesday. I will tell you, if you're selling your house, rates are coming down. This would be a good time to sell in your house. Maybe folks who didn't think they could buy a house before because they couldn't get a mortgage rate that agreed with them, they can now. And so this would be a good time to put your house on the market if that is your inclination. And I'd recommend calling Josh Heisa and his team at Keller Williams Realty. Phone number is 901-461-8147. I'll slow that down. 901-461-8147. Or joshhasthebuyers.com. More than 300 five-star Google reviews. That's right, more than 300 five-star Google reviews. I've told you about all the people who I've talked to and texted with or whatever who had great experiences with Josh. Offers lots of stuff that almost seems can't believe it's true. Make an instant cash offer on your home at full market value. There's one. He'll tell you how much your house is worth for free. If you just pop on over to the website, type in your address and find out. Flexible fees, no upfront costs, lets you out of your contract at any time. It is Josh Heisa. Call him today, 901-461-8147. JoshHasTheBuyers.com. Back in a moment, it's Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Let's do this Cassard deal. Chris Hanna joins me now. Chris, what are we listening to?
That is Like a Rose from Lucinda Williams from her eponymously titled 1989 album, one of my favorites. Send that out to Derrick Rose, news of the day, at least in Grizzlies world.
I want to get to that in a minute. Before then, it's funny, Ron Olson called me, and he was just raving about your piece yesterday about the Rhodes sisters. And what happened in Muscle Shoals? What was the relationship with Muscle Shoals during this period? Was there a studio in Muscle Shoals? What was the relationship between Memphis and Muscle Shoals? Or what was the musical happening in Muscle Shoals?
I think you asked the same question seven times in that sentence.
I try to fill up space. Yeah. I got a 2-hour show.
Right. There was a studio in Muscle. I mean, this gets way too complicated for radio, but I'll try to do the very short version. There's a guy named Rick Hall had a studio in Muscle Shoals and recorded lots of stuff. Lots of talent came out of that area, Percy Sledge and Arthur Alexander and Dan Penn and what have you. There was just a boon, a real explosion, like regional recording and all over the South in particular, but even the country back then. But they started having some hits out of that studio, and they attracted the attention of Atlantic Records, much as Stax and Memphis attracted the attention of Atlantic Records. And one of the things that happened is Atlantic started bringing artists down to record in studios in the South. And so Atlantic brought Sam and Dave to Memphis. And Atlantic brought initially Wilson Pickett to Memphis, and then they had a falling out, and they took Wilson Pickett to Muscle Shoals. And they took Aretha Franklin down to Muscle Shoals. So these local Settler studios started getting lots of this major business that way. There was also a lot of cross-pollination among musicians and background people, because these places, Memphis and Muscle Shoals, are close to each other. And so there are lots of people who went back and forth and did work in both places. Dan Penn, who's in the Memphis Music Hall of Fame, Spooter Oldham, who's going in this week, you know, Chips Moman, Charles Chalmers, who I wrote about in the story, did work in Muscle Shoals. There was just a lot of cross-pollination. You know, we think of the Staple Singers as a Memphis band because they recorded for Stax, which is true, but they're not from Memphis, and their sessions were actually done in Muscle Shoals. Stax sent them to Muscle Shoals to record down there. So there was a lot of just sort of interaction among those two places.
And I gather that Neil Young, you mentioned Spooner Oldham, Neil Young is going to be at the Memphis Hall of Fame, Music Hall of Fame ceremony to help induct Spooner Oldham. That's the idea?
Yeah, they put out a press release to that effect yesterday. So I'm not reporting Neil Young will be there. I am reporting that they are saying Neil Young will be there, and I assume he will. Spooner Oldham has played with Neil Young on lots of records over the years, and is playing with him live right now. And so there's a relationship there, and they try to do stuff like that. You know, they brought Keith Richards in one year when they inducted Scotty Moore, the Elvis's guitar player. So, you know, they tend to do stuff like that every year. It's not always someone as high wattage as Neil Young.
Right. All right. Onward to the Derrick Rose news. What happened?
Well, I don't want to get too far ahead of things, and especially since I don't 100% know all the details myself. So this tweet comes out from Shams Charania saying the Grizzlies are waiving Derrick Rose, and that's like all it says. This is sort of like what we talk about with the Woj stuff. Like, these guys throw this stuff out, and then they move on. And that is that will technically be true as a matter of NBA paperwork, I think. But it gave sort of the wrong impression. It made it seem like the Grizzlies had made it. Made it sound like the Grizzlies' decision. Like, here on the eve of the training camp, the Grizzlies have decided to waive Derrick Rose. They no longer want Derrick Rose. Then there was a follow-up tweet by a reporter from New York, Ian Begley, who said, you know, because Rose had been in New York, and he said, you know, what I'm hearing is Rose, I'm paraphrasing, but something like, Rose asked to be let out of his contract, and he'll be making a statement later this week about his future. That is my understanding of the situation. If the Grizzlies had just actually decided we're going to cut Derrick Rose because we want the roster spot or whatever, they would have done that a month ago ahead of the deadline to waive and stretch players when they did that with the Diakite guy or whatever. So the Grizzlies were, I think up until pretty recently, assumed Derrick Rose would be on their team and were happy to have Derrick Rose on their team for the locker room leadership reasons that, you know, we've all cited. I don't think anything with that had changed, as I could tell. This is a Derrick Rose decision about what he wants to do with his future, what he wants to do next season. How he's going to characterize that when he does whatever statement he does, I don't know. I think Derrick Rose is basically done as a player. So I don't think he's like going to go land on some other NBA team or anything. I don't think even if he wanted to, that option would be there. So I don't know whether he's going to technically retire or not, but I think that's basically sort of what this will be. I think he's done as an NBA player. Why he decided that he wanted out of the deal and not, you know, there's lots of players around the league now who are like making a few million dollars to not play and just be locker room guys. And so no shame in that. It sounds like a good gig to me. For whatever reason, I guess he decided that's not what he wanted to do this year. And so that's that. From a Grizzlies perspective, I think it will open up a roster spot. And to some degree or another, and we'll get the details on that once we get the details on Rose's plans, I think, but to some degree or another, it'll open up more financial room under the luxury tax.
All right, let's take those in some order. In starting with Derrick Rose, do you imagine that last year, he certainly talked about not being done? Like, you, I'll be honest, I remember when they signed him. It was curious to you that they had decided to sign him, certainly to a two-year deal, I think.
Right.
And you prove out to be prescient there, Chris, because 2 years he will not serve.
I mean, it was obvious.
Yeah.
I just wasn't swayed by the local celebrity stuff.
Yeah,
if you set that aside,
yeah,
it was an obvious basketball analysis.
Do you think that he thought, in other words, could it be that he imagined last year that he would come in and you know, he hadn't really the Knicks hadn't played him the previous year. And so he would imagine he had more to give. People can often be a little...
I think players, having self-confidence is part of what makes these players who they are. And so I think players always think, have a higher regard for what they're going to do than maybe people on the outside do. And I think that's totally normal and totally fine. But I don't think he was under some illusion that he was going to be out there playing, 25 minutes right. a night for 70 games either,
And the Grizzlies certainly weren't. The Grizzlies absolutely right. wanted him for all those leadership, whatever reasons that they had him. And who knows? Hopefully Ja learned what there was to learn from Derrick Rose while he
That's one of the interesting questions. So they signed Rose to a 2-year contract, and that's really what I thought was questionable. For lots of reasons that you get into cap stuff that's hyper specific, but they signed him to a 2-year deal in part because I think they wanted to tie him to the organization. And I think by all accounts, I mean, things went poorly last year when Ja tore his labrum, but we haven't had any off court issues with Ja in a long time. And all indications are he seems to be in a pretty good place. And so one of my questions would be I think what the Grizzlies thought Derrick Rose would be as a member of the organization and the locker room, I think they thought he was that. I don't detect any discontent with that. I think they to this day, I think they valued him in that regard. But an interesting question would be if Derrick Rose, got out of a contract with some other team, would the Grizzlies today be interested in signing Derrick Rose for those purposes? I don't know what the answer to that is, but I do think they've reached a more comfortable spot with Ja, certainly than they were a year or so ago.
How much, by the way, I mean, I had a hard time remembering this, and I wasn't around the team as much last year anyway. Were they both with the team the whole time, mostly? Like, in other words, therefore with each other? Or were there moments when, for one reason or another, they were not?
I mean, Derek was with the team. I mean, all year.
All
I mean, he went through periods of inactivity, but he didn't. It wasn't like he was like out for the year with an injury. Yeah. And so I think Ja was mostly around, but I don't remember. Once a guy's injured, you're focused on who's playing.
Exactly. All right. So Grizzlies now have 2 roster spots. They already had 1, and we thought that, who knows? We thought that Scottie Pippen Jr. might, at some point, be elevated into the 1 empty roster spot. He seems like the obvious candidate to be the backup point guard, and now there's a roster spot available. I think you tweeted out that may happen during training camp or whatever. How do you see that? How do you see the backup point guard situation now likely playing out?
So this is all educated guess, context clue kind of stuff at this point. So your maximum main roster is 15 players on your main roster. You don't have to carry 15. You can carry 14. My understanding, I haven't gone back and tried to look at the fine print because all these rules have changed and it's complicated. I think you can carry 13 into the season. I don't think you can carry, you can do 13, only 13 throughout the season. But I think you can start a season that way. With the two-way guys, they can get 50 games out of them, before you have to, you can't use them anymore. And that was a reason when you had 1 roster spot, you don't need to rush it because, you can keep the 1 open 1 all year if you want to, and you don't have to, there's no pressure on you until you hit the 50-game mark. Well, I don't think they can keep 2 roster spots all season. I think they could start the season that way, but there'll be a certain point in the season where you've got to fill that roster spot. And so I don't think they're going to go out in free agency and sign someone to guaranteed money. The obvious name to bring up, and I'm surprised I haven't seen it anywhere, I don't think it'll happen, but it's just such an obvious thing. Markelle Fultz, who was with the Orlando Magic last year, is probably the most prominent unsigned free agent. He plays that position. I'm surprised no one has suggested the Grizzlies go out and sign Markelle Fultz. I don't think they will. I don't think they should. He's a non-shooting guard on a team that already has Ja Morant and Marcus Smart in the rotation. They're close enough to the tax line. I don't think they want to invest guaranteed money in a player who may not be a good fit. So what I think is going to happen is I think they're going to go into training camp probably with the 13, and at some point between the start of training camp and opening night, they're going to put one of those 3 two-ways on the main roster, probably only one. I think they may keep one spot open. And I think that's highly likely to be Scottie Pippen. I think he is the most ready of the three and one of the three that fills the biggest need. And so I think that's what's going to happen unless circumstances change between now and the point they would make that decision.
Is there an argument for either of the other two?
Well, they're not super deep in the front court either, and so if Jay Huff looks like he can play, like, you could use a fifth big on your main roster. Right. The Cam Spencer thing, the only thing with the Cam Spencer thing, I think because he is a second-round rookie, I think it would, you could get him on the main roster for a lower cap hit than the other two, but I think the difference is so minimal that if you save more money off your cap with the Rose thing, I just don't think that matters.
Okay, roughly, if you can, take us through the salary cap implications of this, and would it have been preferable from the Grizzlies' perspective if this had happened back when you could stretch? Or, I mean,
we don't really know. I know everyone wants all the information right now. Mm. The reality is, if we go 4 days without having all the information, our individual lives will not be impacted by this.
Okay, at least tell us what we don't know.
I'm going to answer the question, but I'm going to preface it by, like, I don't have all the answers for you, and that's okay. Yes. We're going to find out. Derrick Rose's cap number, I believe, I mean, it was off the top of my head, I believe it's like $3.4 million this season. The fact that he asked for his release, apparently, tells me that his release was subject to a negotiation. I don't think it's going to be, we give you all your money and you go away. So I think it's going to be that kind of buyout thing where you negotiate that. And so whatever the cap number is for Derrick Rose for the Grizzlies this season, I believe will be less than his contract number. How much less? I don't know the answer to that. And so we're going to find out, I think, in the next week. But regardless, from a basketball standpoint, I don't think he was going to help them on the floor. And so open up a roster spot and open up whatever it is, even if it's just a little bit more room to fill that roster spot, to me is a net positive on the court. So the only question is, you know, how valuable was he at this stage as a locker room guy?
Well, I guess we maybe don't know the answer to this. This is what you would hope, that they would be able to negotiate the buyout and then sign Scottie Pippen Jr. and fill the roster spot and have a backup point guard and still be under the tax.
I believe all those things will be true.
Yeah, and then beyond that, who cares, right? I guess.
Well, I would like
Tyus Jones. Tyus Jones was only $3 million. That, you know,
this is part of the thing with the timing. I also think that Tyus Jones, and we can relitigate that, but Tyus Jones was not going to go to the Grizzlies.
No.
For the same money as he went to Phoenix, as he may start in Phoenix. In fact, I think they told him he's going to start. So that's a non-starter anyway. But, I mean, it's not just – I mean, I think, yes, if they want to add Scottie Pippen to the main roster, I think they'll be able to fill both those roster spots with minimum contract guys and be under the luxury tax. I think that I don't think that's going to be an issue. But I'm not dedicated to them being under the luxury tax. And so – you know, whatever little wiggle room you can have, maybe around in-season trades. The more space they can create, the better. But I think, regardless, I think having Scottie Pippen Jr., if that's who it is, on the main roster instead of Derrick Rose, is going to be more beneficial to them within 48 minutes and 82 games.
We don't know how dedicated they are to being under the luxury tax.
They seem pretty dedicated, but I would hope there's wiggle room given
they seem pretty dedicated. Yeah. All right, so there we go. By the way, speaking of Jay Huff, who do you imagine? Again, so much of this is just a function of injuries, so it's an impossible guess. I suspect we'll see quite a lot of Jay Huff, don't you think? I was going to ask, between Jay Huff and Cam Spencer, you're going to see much more of Jay Huff, don't you imagine?
The question is, can he play? He's been really good in the G League for multiple teams. He's been like one of the better players in the G League. He's been really good in the Summer League. For whatever reason, he's not gotten a lot of chances in NBA minutes. There are people who have watched him more than I have who think, like, he's an NBA player. He should just be on a roster. But he has to sort of prove that. If he proves that he is a functional, you know, soak-up-minutes, realistic NBA player, I think he's going to play a lot. Because they only have four bigs on the roster. And, like, Brandon Clark's not playing 82 games. Probably none of them are playing 82 games, but I guarantee you Brandon Clark's not playing 82.
Hi, Chris. I appreciate it. Thanks very much.
All right. Thanks.
That's Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphian. So there you have it. It feels likely, Jeffrey, doesn't it, that we're going to have Scottie Pippen as a back. And which, honestly, just from a from a streamlining the entire situation standpoint seems sensible, doesn't it? Seems like a better, seems like a less cumbersome basketball situation.
Yeah, and it feels like he's much more likely to contribute.
Yeah, 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 yeah. He's gonna, you've got a backup point guard who is the backup point guard,
right?
Rather than having to work around this stuff. Now you still have the situation of how many minutes is he gonna get, because you need to get minutes for Marcus Smart, and you need to get minutes for Dez, and you know, you need to get minutes for Vince Williams, and some of this involved, let's have no point guard, right? One of the ways we can get minutes for all these wings who are going to play, Kennard's another one, is to have some non-point guard getting point guard minutes, and so who knows, you know, how much that's going to be Scottie Pippen actually stepping into that role, or how much of it is just going to be Scottie Pippen Jr. stepping into the roster spot. But in fact, the backup point guard will not be a point guard.
Love when they play Dez at the one. Like, it's he's capable of doing it, but
I just Smart at the one. How about Vince Williams at the one? How about, like, that's the question. You know, yes, he became more, he became better at it, but it'll be an interesting question to see how that plays out. We got Fish on Friday coming up next. In the meantime, I will tell you, NFL Week 4 has arrived. You can start with a big chance for a big win on FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. If you're new to FanDuel, you can get started with $200 in bonus bets guaranteed when you place your first $5 bet. That's fun. You place one $5 bet, and all of a sudden, $200 magically appears as bonus bets in your account. You got Cowboys Giants Thursday night. Must win.
Hooray.
For about who you like there. And you can do it by going to FanDuel.com/Calkins, C-A-L-K-I-N-S, C-A-L-K-I-N-S, to make every moment more this season. Easy for me to say. FanDuel is, of course, official sportsbook partner of the NFL. Must be 21 or older, present Tennessee. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issues, non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call Tennessee Redline 1-800-889-9789. Fish on Friday on Tuesday coming up next. It's Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show, joined now by Charles Fishman. He is our man in Washington, D.C., author of 3 New York Times bestsellers, most recently One Giant Leap, about the extraordinary efforts of ordinary Americans to get us to the moon. Also a 3-time winner of the Gerald Loeb Award for Excellence in Business Writing, and retired Mississippi River tugboat deckhand, joins me now. Fishman, how are you?
I'm excellent. I'm a little overwhelmed by the flow of Fish on Friday style news. We got a lot going on. I also very oddly have an enormous grasshopper hanging upside down on a closet door in the little upstairs bedroom I'm using. And I've just chosen to let the grasshopper hang there until this segment is over. Then we'll move the grasshopper back outside. But that's never happened before. The mascot. Oh,
it's very zen of you. That's very zen of you.
The mascot. Well, he or she. It's the mascot of Fish on Friday on Tuesday. A big green grasshopper.
Because you have so much Fish on Friday on Tuesday news, we're going to go with it's not a speed round technically. It's a speedier round. A speedish round. A somewhat speedy round. Speedish round. 90 seconds, Charles, limited on all these topics, and Jeffrey has the timer set. We will begin with last week you said that the Fed was going to cut interest rates 0.25%. That's what your prediction was. How did that turn out?
Let's be clear. I said there's no way Jay Powell is going 0.5%. Too dramatic. He's the anti-drama federal official. And what did he do? 0.5%. 0.5%. So that's why that we have accountability here at Fish on Friday on Tuesday. I recall John Martin making a bet about a recent football game, a prediction about a recent football game. Sometimes when you make a prediction, you're totally wrong. I think 0.5% is great. They don't want to get behind. They want Americans to continue. You notice I'm using the words continue to have a robust economic life. So they went 0.5%. Let's see what happens next.
Tropical Storm Helen. What can you tell us about Tropical Storm Helen? I don't understand this next topic.
The first thing I could tell you is it's Tropical Storm Helene. So let's get the name
look
right.
Look how you spelled it. Look how you spelled it in your text to me. Look how you spelled
it. Did I spell it incorrectly? I apologize to you.
Speaking of accountability.
I'm 0 for 2. I've made 2 mistakes and 2 items. Tropical Storm Helene formed literally this morning while you were on the air. This could be a huge storm. It's just west of Cuba. It's just off the Yucatan Peninsula. And it's headed for Florida. It's going to start moving incredibly fast. The wind is supposed to arrive in Florida tomorrow morning at this time on the West Coast. It's going to come up the Gulf if it goes according to plan. It could go to Tennessee and Indiana. It will go through Tennessee midweek, late week, and then it's headed for Indiana, a hurricane in Indiana. So just watch for it. Wow. This is one of these storms that is expected to quote-unquote explode, to go from being not organized 24 hours ago to being a hurricane 24 hours from now, and they are predicting it to be a major hurricane, Category 3 or higher. So we don't have a lot of listeners on the Florida coast, but this could come sweeping into Tennessee. Watch it. It's the 8th named storm of the year, 8th named.
U.S. News and World Reports does these college rankings. Does anyone care about them anymore? What's the news on? They dropped today, I guess. What do you want to tell us about the U.S. News
morning,
and World Report college
this
rankings?
Morning. I guess what I wanted to say is they have endured a lot of controversy. Last year, this controversy sort of took real form. A dozen U.S. medical schools dropped out of the ranking. Dropping out means not that they're not ranked, but that they refuse to provide U.S. News with any data anymore. 10 of the top 15 ranked medical schools in the country. Then the law schools followed suit, and 13 of the top 15 law schools dropped out. Columbia dropped out of the main rankings. Columbia provides no data because one of its own professors discovered that Columbia was submitting fraudulent data to up its ranking. And Columbia at one point ranked number 2 in the whole country. U.S. News fought back this year and said that the number of colleges that participated, 1,500 are ranked, 78.1% supplied data this year, down only slightly from 79.9% last year. That translates into 27 new universities saying we're not participating in this. This is too weird. You know what makes me uncomfortable about it? People do want a ranking. When we were going to college, there were big books like Barron's, the Yale Guide, the Princeton Guide. U.S. News charges universities. They rank them, and then 10 more seconds, and then if you want to use the U.S. News logo and your ranking, those are copyrighted. You have to pay U.S. News. One data point, the University of Alabama last year sent U.S. News $32,000 to use the logo and promote itself. That's weird. We're ranking you, then we're charging you. That's just weird.
I really believe that we should always keep abreast of the Liverwurst news. And so you've got a Liverwurst news update for us?
Well, we talked a lot about this listeria infection that killed 9 people. A bunch of updates. First of all, Boar's Head has completely, I wouldn't say destroyed, but seriously damaged their reputation as a quality cold cut brand. You can't look in the cold cut.
I think a Boar's Head is the Cadillac of cold cuts. Yeah. When I walk up, I'm like, I can't afford that Boar's Head stuff. I'm going to go house brand baloney.
In the factory where this came from, pools of blood in puddles, flies in the food supplies for months. Boar's Head has removed liverwurst as a product it will sell forever. Liverwurst is discontinued because it killed.
It's blaming the that's a total lack of accountability.
Blaming the liverwurst.
Liverwurst.
You want a little more accountability? They've closed the facility, the factory, the Boar's Head factory, where the infection came from, where the Listeria infection came from, in Jarrett, Virginia. The largest employer in that county, south of Richmond, just north of the North Carolina border, 500 good-paying jobs. I say good-paying in quotes. Lots of people with 10 years' experience making $20 an hour. So they're paying, as I like to say, grown-ass adults $20 an hour after 10 years. But those people out of work, hard to find work there. And again, why are you closing the, you know, that's
right, you're taking it out on the
workers.
Just do, run right. a cleaner
they
ship.
They did offer, those people were all union. They were offered jobs at other Boar's Head facilities, but there aren't any Boar's Head facilities right nearby. So that's tough, right. tough on those 500 people.
The Titan submersible, which is the one that blew up under the water and killed all those people, Ocean Gate.
Imploded. Whatever. It didn't blow up. It blew in. Imploded.
Okay, it blew in. We got news on what happened. What happened?
Yeah, this is going to go a little longer than the 90 seconds or the 45 seconds or whatever we said.
I'll decide.
There's a coast. This happened a year ago, June 18th, 2023. Lots of huge attention disappeared. Didn't know what happened. This is a Coast Guard investigative hearing into culpability. And there are all kinds of revelations. First, at the moment it happened, and in the months afterward, there was information, leaks, lawsuits filed that seemed to indicate that people, the five people who were killed on board, including the CEO, knew what was happening. At this hearing, it's become clear they did not know. There was one message sent 30 minutes before the problem, all good here. Then just 6 seconds before the implosion, there was a message that said, dropped two weights. And some people who didn't know what they were talking about interpreted that as a sign that they were dropping their ballast weights so they could rocket up to the future, to the surface, because they're having problems. Not true. They dropped weights that allowed them to slow down and approach the Titanic. But the Titanic is at 12,500 feet on the bottom, 2.4 miles. Titan imploded at about 10,000 feet down, just above it. But now there's Coast Guard video, unbelievable, chilling Coast Guard video of the wreckage on the floor not far from the Titanic. Really, really kind of chilling. At this hearing, the Marine Operations Director for the company, Oceansgate, said, David Lockbridge, there was a big push to get this done and a lot of steps were missed along the way. He was fired because he complained about safety problems. When you saw the hull being constructed that eventually imploded, did you have confidence, sir, in the construction of the hull? No confidence whatsoever, he said. The director of engineering appeared. Lockridge called the company culture smoke and mirrors, just focused on profit. The director of engineering was asked why this sub wasn't safety certified. There's never been a deep sea accident in history. No one has ever been killed or injured in one of these dives on subs down to this depth, except
until
for this
then,
one.
Really?
Right. Why wasn't it safety certified? The former director of engineering, Tony Nissen, said that the CEO said it would take too long and it was way too expensive. Not interested. He was fired. The most revealing witness, perhaps of all, the former finance director of Oceansgate, just in charge of moving the money around, said she quit because it was so clear that the company wasn't interested in safety at all. So at the time, the passengers included some really experienced people, but boy, oh boy, there was lots of evidence that this was not a vehicle you wanted to be in. And that hearing has another week to go. So it'll be interesting to see what else we learn.
I was sad to see that Tupperware bankrupt. Why?
Well, you tell me why. Tupperware was a brilliant creation back in 1948.
It locks in the freshness, Charles.
An engineer named Earl Tupper figured out how to use black tarry plastic that had been an element of some World War II weaponry and important engineering in World War II, how to turn it into something clean and appealing and even translucent. There was no plastic in 1948. Look around your life. I've got a plastic coffee cup, a plastic phone case, a plastic cup, a plastic bowl right here on my desk. Half my computer connectors are plastic. There was no plastic. And he figured out not only how to take this unappealing substance and make it appealing, but he then had the idea to make sealable food containers, which was actually a brilliant application of
genius,
this.
Genius, yeah.
And then there was a woman named Brownie Wise, who figured out that the best way to sell this completely new product that nobody had any experience with was to gather women in small groups in parties, garden parties, and show them the food containers and how they worked. And very early on, she would fill, they were called Wonder Bowls. The early bowls were called Wonder Bowls. You could buy a nesting set of five with lids. And she would fill one of them with grape juice and toss it around among the women. They filed Chapter 11. You know
party
why?
Party trick there. Why?
Because the plastic containers you get from Chinese takeout are just as good as the Tupperware ones, and they never figured out how to go cheap. God, we missed so much news. You cut me off soon. I'm early. It's 11:52.
Yeah. No, well, I don't know, Jeffrey. Is it time for us?
We had a lot of ads today.
We have a lot of ads today, Charles. We're gonna.
You know why? That's because of my salary.
You want to tell the dog stroller news? You want to give? Or you want to save that for next week?
Let's save the dog stroller news for next week. It's big dog stroller news.
Big. That'll bring him back next week. Big
that
dog
will bring him back.
News
I want people to have
week.
A reason to return.
On Twitter,
we'll have a good week. Thank
you. Fishman. The ads just mean the people love us and they want to make money. Jeffrey, first of all, do you have the poll in front of you? Or is that too much to ask?
No, I can grab it.
We asked the people if they're happy, if they're mad, glad, or disappointed, but they get it. About Memphis's decision. This was a Jeff Calkins Show poll. The results were?
This has now become so difficult to navigate. We have 67.9% say disappointed, but I get it. 18.6% say mad. 13.4% say glad.
There you go. All right, what's coming up next?
Jeff, here's what's coming up next on Jason and John. Jessica Benson will join them today. Also, Jason Fitz, Tim Murray with me on Jeffrey Wright and Company. Jeff will join Gabe at 5:00.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We got to get out of here. Back tomorrow for now. Work is done.